You're listening to Packers Talk Network.
Do you want to experience the thrill of a Packers game at Lambeau Field? If so, be sure to get your game tickets from the longtime trusted source in Wisconsin, Ticket King. Visit their locations in Milwaukee and Green Bay, or just go to their website, theticketking.com. Again, that's theticketking.com.
Don't forget, they have to have good reason to overturn the official's decision. Here it comes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the inaugural episode of a brand new Packers podcast, After Further Review. I am your host, Ross Uglum. I'm a writer at CheeseheadTV.com. And joining me for the very first time is Zach Jacobson. Zach, why don't you tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Well, I have been a Cheesehead for as long as I can remember, really. I grew up loving the team, and that passion never dissipated. I am a writer right now for Cheesehead TV. I'm Ross's colleague there. I was formerly of the NFC North Barroom. You can find me on Twitter at Zach A. Jacobson, Z-A-C-H. And, you just find me there, read any of my work.
Right on. So if some of you are followers of Zach's, didn't know about me and this new venture, my name's Ross Uglum. I was the host of From the Benches with Jacob Westendorf and Ryan Hilsen. Ryan and I kind of took the last 50 or so episodes ourselves. I'm a writer at Cheesehead TV, like Zach mentioned. I also cover North Dakota State football and men's basketball for the Scout Network. That's kind of what I do on a sports writing media basis as of right now. So you can follow me on Twitter at Ross Uglum. This show came to be with Ryan's kind of retirement from podcasting sort of as a whole. He and I have different schedules now, and it just didn't work to always get together once a week, and if we weren't going to do it once a week, it probably wasn't worth it. So I got in touch with Zach, and after a brief negotiation and a slight change of heart, he decided that it was something he wanted to do, so here we are, and I couldn't be more excited about it. Zach's a young, up-and-coming star, I think, in the Packers media, and I'm really excited to have him on here. So
I'm excited to be here as well.
For sure. Let's get started then with the first game that we're going to review, and that is the opening game of the season. Green Bay took on Jacksonville. It was like 112 degrees. And at the end of everything, the Packers came out on top 27-23 with a wonderful open field tackle on a 4th-and-1 bubble screen to seal the game. I think there's about 14 seconds left on the clock, so plenty of intrigue and drama in that one. No question about it. Zach, let's start out by passing out some game balls.
Well, saying 112 degrees, that's probably the understatement of the year because those guys looked absolutely gassed. My first game ball, I would toss it Joe Thomas's way, because for a guy that just barely made the cusp of the 53-man roster and presumably probably beat out Carl Bradford for that job, he grabbed that interception just to have the awareness. I believe it was Mika Hyde who tipped the ball and, you know, just fell right into Thomas's mitts. To have that awareness, you know, it's already kind of a gradual sign of improvement for Thomas. You know, he took a lot of flack last year for, you know, him and Nate Palmer both were just dreadful. But, you know, Thomas as the dime linebacker, you know, on passing downs, it's kind of a role that he's really come into. And picking off that pass on the first drive kind of really, you know, kind of spoke more of his upside and showed what he could do as well. Everything else he did for the rest of the game, he had a few tackles. I believe he forced a fumble. You know, he really had a solid game. And to start the season off that way, you know, for a front seven that I have spoken so, you know, badly about, and I'm sure others have as well, you know, they really stepped up to the plate. But Joe Thomas, I'm tossing a game ball his way.
Yeah, I'm excited to look at, I think, the film and really see some of what Capers was able to cook up that new look where both linebackers come off the field and Joe Thomas comes on and plays inside linebacker next to Morgan Burnett. And just real interesting. We'll touch on that a little bit more later. But what a kind of innovative way to defend the pass. Not that it went all that well today, but that's a very talented Jaguars passing game. And I think really a Jacksonville program that's on the rise. My game ball goes to Demaryius Randall. We'll see how important he is going forward just because I think he becomes your number one cornerback if Sam Shields suffered another concussion. Shields, a guy with concussion history. So if that's what happens, you know, you could see, well, you know, with any concussion, I mean, that can be the end of a career, but you can see a 4-week absence, you could see a 6-week absence, you just never know. He could play next week, but I think that would really solidify how they have to line up. I think Quentin Rollins pretty much and Micah Hyde become your slot guys, and all of a sudden Gunter is kind of locked into that outside cornerback position after kind of struggling in the slot today. I think you'd want Ladarius Gunter playing outside off man coverage anyway. I didn't really like him as a nickelback today. I think he got beat quite a few times, and his strengths really don't, I don't think they translate well to nickelback. I don't think he's that agile. I think he's big, and I also think he's maybe not a great blitzer, which is something that you might want in an inside guy. So Demaryius Randall had a fantastic game today. Really drew that Allen Robinson assignment a lot today, which is surprising considering, you know, how long Shields has been with the team. But he, for the most part, took Allen Robinson away, and that is really, really impressive. And I think going forward, obviously, if Shields can't be a part of things anymore, you know, he's going to be your clear-cut, number one, unquestioned cornerback, and that's a huge deal. So that's my game ball, is Demaryius Randall.
Rightfully Aaron, too. You know, back to Rollins, I think it's kind of, you know, it doesn't really speak well in his favor that he got replaced in the slot by Gunter because of how poorly Rollins was playing, and Gunter didn't even really fill in those shoes that well. So that's, you know, I'm sure that's going to be a point of emphasis in practice this week.
No question about it. And I think, you know, Rollins is a talented kid, made some huge plays last season. It would be pretty foolish to come to any sort of dramatic conclusions about Quentin Rollins because he saw a little hit in playing time today.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
So what do we think of, you know, I think that was because of what happened with Josh Sitton, the underrated decision to just kind of say to hell with it, an inside linebacker, and roll with Blake and Jake was a little bit underreported or not talked about as much. I think it was a really big deal that the Packers have decided to basically hand off the inside of their linebacking core to the fourth-round picks of the last two seasons. What did you think of how Blake Martinez and Jake Ryan played in nickel and base?
I was really impressed with both of them as a pair. Individually, I'm not much of a fan of Jake Ryan after today's performance. I mean, you know, not based solely on today's performance, not overall, but you know, he looked pretty slow in pass coverage, and you could tell because that was a weakness of his game last season. Rightfully so, you know, he was a rookie. He's coming into his second year now. You know, he's still got some basics of his game to work on. But they both combined for 13 tackles, and I think that's, you know, that combination together, I think both of those guys are really going to be, you know, a great duo in the middle.
Yeah, I think I understand your concerns with Ryan. I don't think he is yet the player that he's eventually going to be. But at the same time, I think you sort of just hope that Jake Ryan could be like a slightly well-off man's version of A.J. Hawk. And so you just get 10 years of slightly above average play, but instead of spending the fifth overall pick on it, you spend a fourth rounder. And then Blake Martinez is your playmaker and your cover guy. And you can absolutely get away with that in nickel. I mean, there's no question about it. If Jake Ryan is the hammer and Blake Martinez is the chase, it works out just fine. I think that Jake Ryan has the potential just because of his testing numbers and, you know, coming off of that knee injury he had at Michigan. If he can get some of that agility back, I think you could have, you know, two sort of cover linebackers or at least have the potential, because his athletic testing is actually very impressive. But right now they've kind of got the fullback linebacker pretty much in Jake Ryan, and then the cover guy in Blake Martinez. And it sure worked out well from a front seven perspective today, no question about that.
And that's what Blake Martinez specialized in college, you know, his coverage ability. And I think he brings that to the Packers. And, you know, it kind of makes up for Jake Ryan's, you know, offset kind of coverage ability. But, you know, at the same time, you know, I'm still giving Jake Ryan some time. You know, he's still got to learn the defense. He's still got to get adjusted. You know, I may have just kind of bashed him a couple times in the past 2 minutes, but, you know, I still have high hopes for Ryan.
For sure. Speaking of inside linebacker, what an interesting way to use Micah Hyde and Morgan Burnett. Now, without Sam Shields, you know, that becomes a completely different question. I don't think there's any doubt about that, because the way that Micah Hyde doesn't bring value to the Green Bay Packers because he's an elite cornerback or an elite safety. He brings value to the Green Bay Packers because he's a passable safety. Or he's a slightly above average safety. He's also a slightly above average slot corner, and he's an average outside corner. And when you can do all of those things at a slightly above average NFL level, you become valuable because you are usable in more than one way, and that is the value of Micah Hyde. So when he came in and played deep safety with HaHa Clinton Dix so that Morgan Burnett could play inside linebacker, that was cool. I'm not really sure how well it worked. I'll need to go back and kind of review the film. We are recording this right after Sunday Night Football, so neither Zach or I have really had a chance to break down the film. We're going to find out kind of as the season goes on what time slot we're in, and that'll sort of maybe dictate when we record or if we get a chance to see a little bit more film. But as of right now, what did you think of Burnett's new role? And how did he play today?
Yeah, we got a little work to do with the time zones. I'm really liking Burnett in his new role because he's an instinctive tackler, and you know when you can tackle well, that kind of gives you, you know, as a safety, that gives you a chance to move up and into this hybrid role that Burnett is in. Like Buchanan, I believe, over in Arizona, he's a great tackler. That opens up the door for, you know, a more, what's the word, a more, you know, versatile skill set. You know, we're really seeing Burnett come into this role, and you know, having the depth of Micah Hyde, that actually it gives you more comfort to be able to move Burnett into this role, because Hyde, like you said, he's a pretty good safety. He's not great. He's a decent corner in the slot, especially with guarding tight ends, who I think he's pretty good at. He takes a lot of flack for his coverage on tight ends, but I'm personally, you know, I'm a fan of it. I liked it. He made a few big tackles today, but he also had a pretty rough day. I think he was called for a big penalty. He, you know, gave up a lot of big pass plays. He didn't have a great performance, but at the same time, he did make some crucial plays and some big tackles. When he got his hands on a guy that he was, you know, targeting, he brought him down, and that's really all you can ask for, especially in this role of his.
And I think he's clearly playing a new position. I mean, I think it's very obvious to me, at least, that he needs to learn how to play there instead of...
Oh, absolutely.
That, you know, because that Dom Capers 3-4 is such a cover 3 heavy scheme where you've got safeties that have interchangeable responsibilities, but one of them's almost always single high, and the other one's almost always in the box, but it's not all, and it never was always Burnett in the box and Clinton Dix single high, because Clinton Dix is a good run defender, and I think this season, I mean, I think that kid's just going to be a superstar. I really do. Very impressed with Clinton Dix's play today, but it'll be interesting to look at the film and see what Burnett actually did. Zach, you're not one of those people that thinks that Clay Matthews is better suited an inside linebacker, are you?
Oh, well, this just got awkward.
Oh, no.
No, I'm kidding. His natural spot is on the outside as an edge rusher, and that, I think, that should be where he stays. I think that move to inside linebacker kind of got blown out of proportion because the first game, you know, was against Chicago in 2014 where they moved him to inside linebacker, and he just blew up. And it kind of turned all the eyes on him, like, oh, is Clay more naturally suited as an inside linebacker? Is that his prime position? And then since then, he kind of just took a huge dump off from that spot and his productivity there. I think he needs to stay on the outside. But hey, having his versatility is always welcome because having a guy that can play the outside and the inside, you know, I think that speaks more to Matthew's just God-given ability as a linebacker.
And he did have some inside rushes today. I think you'll see that. I think that they're, you know, willing to let him kind of play all over the place. I think they're willing to give a lot of guys a shot to play inside linebacker this season, no question about it. I think what people saw in Clay was that traditional inside linebacker that they grew up with in the 90s when running the football was important and kind of how you used to win games. And what happened was they were getting inside linebacker play before that was, you know, one of the probably worst two or three units in the league. And then Matthews came in and played like an average or slightly above average at inside linebacker and looked like a revelation. Whether it actually was or not is questionable. But when he's healthy, and he's kind of a high-strung guy as far as tendons and ligaments and things like that, because he seems to always have soft tissue issues. But when he's healthy and when he's on the edge, he's a field tilter. He's an absolute menace, and he was a menace today. Not only in the run game, but rushing the passer. He got a sack. I think he's tied now with Reggie White for second all-time with Green Bay sacks. So impressive on the edge today. Welcome back. I mean, whatever they've got to do, Blake and Jake, Joe Thomas, Morgan Burnett, Marvin Evans, I don't care. Whatever you've got to do to plug up the middle so that Clay Matthews can continue to play on the edge with that Jones, Perry, Peppers rotation, I'm good with it. I absolutely love it. This will probably be a recurring part of the show. I found that on From the Benches, we almost never talked about Aaron Rodgers because what is there really to talk about? You kind of just say, well, he's awesome, and then that's the end of it. So
yeah, it's redundant.
This is the part of the show where I guess we talk about Aaron Rodgers briefly. That throw with Jalen Ramsey hanging on his shoulder pads to Devontae, damn. Okay, that's what I have to say about that. It was unbelievable. And I think, too, there were some communication issues and some game issues there where he looked sort of like a blend of the 2014 MVP and the 2015 guy that was struggling just a little bit. The biggest play of the day for the offense was a offensive pass interference drawn by Jared Cook. As far as length is concerned, the shots downfield were still empty. Not saying that that's going to continue and that the offense is going to struggle like it did a season ago. I think I'm more probably saying that there is a lot of potential for this offense because they put up 27 points, kicked two very deep field goals. So, you know, in theory, it probably could have been 35 points, but they have potential. I think that there are still some things that they can work out, one of which, you know, actually includes getting Jared Cook a little bit more involved. But this is a team and an Aaron Rodgers that I was very impressed with today.
Well, that throw that he made today with Jalen Ramsey draped all over his back like a spider monkey, I think it kind of reminds me of that play that was called back in 2014. I believe it was week four against the Bears. He shook off like three guys. Hall just shot a deep ball to Devontae Adams, and it was a touchdown, but it got called back. I believe it was Corey Linsley or J.C. Treader on the holding call. My memory is just absolute putty at this point. It really reminded me of that. You know, Rodgers just making things happen. And like you said, it would be kind of unfathomable to not talk about how great he is. And I know that that will probably piss fans of the other 31 teams off because, I mean, look at us. Look at us Packer fans. We're spoiled. We're spoiled with Brett Favre. We're spoiled with Aaron Rodgers. You know, it's kind of only right that we acknowledge, you know, the greatness that he brings every Sunday.
Yeah. So, us in our 22 years of Hall of Fame quarterback play, I'm sure is very irritating. What I want to ask you, Zach, is with as much nickel as Green Bay played today, and with as much as was written about this young front seven, where in the world did that run defense come from?
I honestly wish I could tell you. I really, because I was not expecting them to hold T.J. Yeldon to 20, 39 yards, you know, on his abundance of carries. They opened up the game. He had 10 carries on his, or 10 yards on his first six attempts. And that kind of, like, you know, I was like, whoa, where is this coming from? Because, you know, for the past few months, I and many others have been talking about how weak this front seven might be, regardless of the outside linebacker rotation, you know, the young depth at inside linebacker, the whole defensive line, you know, pretty much anchored by Mike Daniels and Mike Daniels alone. We don't know what we're going to get from Kenny Clark just yet. He's probably not even 100% coming off his back injury, but, you know, we'll see down the road. I honestly don't know where this run defense came from. I really can't answer that. Sincerely, I don't have an answer for that. It just blew me away.
One thing I will say about the run defense is B.J. Raji is one of my favorite Packers of all time. I'll never forget that run that he had in the 2010 playoffs. Honestly, one of the best four games you'll ever see an interior defensive lineman play. But he kind of skated by toward the end of his career on his reputation. And what happened was when he got hurt and they signed LaTroy Guyon to play nose, that was Guyon's best position. And now that Raji retired and Guyon has been able to slide back in from end to play a little nose, he really is an effective player there. I'm not sure he's, you know, a Pro Bowl level guy or even a far above average guy, but he made four or five impact run plays. And with how much Jacksonville throws the ball, if you can take away four or five runs, that's huge. That's a huge percentage of their attempts. And then I think, you know, another part was Clay Matthews, which is unbelievable. Anything that they were trying to run off tackle, just it was not going to go down like that. And then Mike Daniels, I mean, there's nothing really to really, I mean, even be said. He is so strong and so low that guards and tackles just, they can't hang. I mean, they can't run the ball against him. And for a guy that was supposed to be this undersized pass rushing defensive end, he is a complete 3-4 D end. And that includes defending the run. And it's super impressive for a guy of his stature. I don't think there's any question about that. Speaking of things that were written about, lots has been made of a Bob McGinn story about Josh Sitton. Pete Doherty's got a story about Josh Sitton. Pretty much everybody has a story about Josh Sitton. As most people know, Josh Sitton, the all-pro guard for the Packers, one of the best pass-protecting guards in all of football, was released on cutdown day. It appears that the Packers tried to trade him. Did not find a trade partner, had no intentions of extending Sitton, and his reputation as a guy who likes to speak his mind made him an unattractive asset for the 2016 season. So they outright released him, and they now have a little bit more cap space to do a lot of extensions. I mean, there are a number of notable players that could potentially do extensions in season. So that's sort of the bright side of that. The other bright side is that Lane Taylor appeared to hold his own today. One of the big plays early in the game was a fourth and one. It was 0-0. That was right after that Joe Thomas interception. And they ran Eddie Lacy right over left guard. And Lane Taylor opened up a real, real big hole. He's a third-year player. Seems to really be making that second- to third-year jump. Yes, he was an undrafted guy, but you know, Ted Thompson certainly seems to find those. I think he was always a pretty good run blocker and just a guy that they were trying to get athletically ready to block the pass rush.
Yeah, I think I tweeted out during that 4th-and-1 on the Packers' first drive. I think that handoff to Eddie Lacy, you know, by the left guard, I think that wasn't them trying to make a statement by going for it on 4th down. I think that was kind of them making a statement to Josh Sitton. You know, I could be overanalyzing, you know, I could be making something out of nothing here, but, you know, call me crazy. But I do think Lane Taylor really held up today. And I don't want to, you know, like we said earlier, I don't want to just judge a guy's, you know, worth to a team based off of one game. It's a really small sampling size, but it gives a lot of promise moving forward that Taylor was able to hold up against a pass rush that included Malik Jackson. You know, and Rodgers was only sacked once in this game, and that's pretty damn good for an offensive line that was, you know, they had David Bakhtiari on the injury report until this morning before the game, where he was taken off, and, you know, no Josh Sitton. There's not much cohesion on the offensive line, but, you know, as the weeks go on, I think they're going to start finding their rhythm. They're going to start forming their band of brothers, and, you know, it's really going to be something interesting to watch develop.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see it. I'm excited actually to have more of a mauler at left guard, because Bakhtiari is so soft as a run blocker. And such an elite pass blocker that to have someone over there to create mismatches in the run blocking game is potentially exciting. And I understand where Green Bay was coming from. I mean, Sitton is a guy who has back problems. And for offensive linemen on the wrong side of 30, back problems is not something I want to hear. But
yeah,
I believe
he was the oldest as well, I believe, between Lang and Sitton.
Right, yeah. Lang, Sitton. Shredder. They all need Bakhtiari, they all need extensions, and Sitton was the oldest. And if you've been following Ted Thompson for any amount of time, you knew that there was a price that Ted was going to offer Josh, and if he didn't like it, that was going to be it, because everybody's replaceable, even all pros like Josh Sitton. So I'm sure Green Bay, to be honest with you, probably offered him about what he's making now, and he said no, and they said, cool. I mean, I think that's kind of the long and short of it. But it wasn't all unicorns and rainbows. It was a 4-point win with a stop on 4th-and-1 against the team that picked in the top 5 a season ago. I mean, I think a lot of football people will tell you that Jacksonville's going to be quite a bit better this year. They get Dante Fowler back. People really are high on Jalen Ramsey. I am too. I just can't believe that he called out Aaron Rodgers before his first pro game.
Idiot.
That was a little bit insane, but I mean, I think Jacksonville's probably a pretty good squad. What do the Packers have to work on? I mean, this is a game where they didn't cover, for those of you that pay attention to such things, and a game that they certainly tried to give away. What do they need to work on going into next week?
Their pass coverage. Without a doubt, their pass coverage. They gave up 320 yards to Blake Bortles, and you just can't do that. They gave up over 70 yards to Hearns and Robinson apiece. There was just sloppy coverage all around, you know, from the corners. We saw Sam Shields with concussions, so we don't know what the deal with him is moving forward. So if he's out for a certain period of time, then that kind of mixes things up, you know, with the cornerbacks. They're going to have to, you know, because Demetri Goodson isn't back yet, and even when he is back, let's be honest, he's pretty much just an empty roster spot, aside from his gunner duties, of course. But, you know, Josh Hawkins is still out. We don't know what the timetable is on him. They have a tough road, you know, moving forward, and they're going to have Stephon Diggs to deal with next week, Laquan Treadwell, who's pretty much a non-factor today versus Tennessee. They're going to have some speedy wide receivers against Detroit the week after. They have some tests coming up, and I really want to see how that secondary holds up.
Yeah, that Detroit matchup is going to be interesting, because your Blakes and Jakes and Morgan Burnett's are going to be busy with Eric Ebron and Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah, and Calvin Johnson's not there anymore, so that's not the threat that it used to be. But that middle of the pass defense is going to be stressed. There's no question about it. They need to sweep the leg, snap the neck, whatever you want to call it. It was so frustrating to see them get a sack on early downs, or even at the end of the game. I mean, It's 4th and 14. Jacksonville should not get a first down. You should not commit a penalty. Those things just can't happen. And 3rd and long and 4th down situations, Green Bay was just putrid. I think the only 4th down stop they got, and Gus Bradley was playing like a guy who knew that he probably didn't have the better team. Full disclosure, Gus is a North Dakota State alum, so I'm a huge Gus Bradley fan, but his style today just made me so proud. I mean, he was taking Green Bay's best punch and was absolutely fearless, basically pretended like there wasn't even a punter on the squad. I think they went 5 for 6 or 4 for 5 on 4th down, with the only one being that bubble screen, which he said in the post-game press conference was a run-pass option, so that's kind of even on Bortles, really, to be honest with you, to see that look. So that cashing in on low-leverage situations for the opposing offense needs to get better. I don't know if that means to just continue to play normal Packers defense and bring pressure or what it is, but the dropping 7-8 guys into coverage on 3rd and 12 and giving up a 13-yard catch is tough. Giving up a 6-yard comeback on 4th and 5 to Allen Robinson, also tough. Things like that need to go away if this team's going to progress and move forward, which I'm sure they are. I mean, it's everything's going to be fine. Winning non-conference games on the road in the NFL is freaking hard, and the Packers just did that today. So certainly not complaining, but we can't just talk about the good things.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, those other conference games that you face, those other teams, you don't see those guys as often. So, you know, it's a new challenge every time almost. And, you know, back to Gus Bradley, you know, hats off to him. He coached one hell of a game, and someone even argued he outcoached McCarthy today. I feel like if they didn't run that bubble screen, like you said, it was a run-pass option, but if that wasn't Bortles' primary target, and he targeted the middle of the field like he had been doing all day against that weak spot in the Packers' defense, I feel like this game would have a completely different outcome. You know, Packers really dodged a huge Jaguar coming at them fast on that 4th and 1.
No question about it. I mean, this was a game that they repeatedly tried to give to Jacksonville. I think it was pretty clear who the more talented squad was, but that Morgan Burnett penalty on 4th and 14, giving up 2, 3, 4th and 5s. If Jacksonville doesn't get even one of those and gives Rodgers a short field, I think they're going for the score. Another thing, too, and this is just me being me, but when you have Aaron Rodgers and it's 1st and goal inside the 4 and you run the ball 3 times and then kick a field goal, I'm going to get pissed. That's how it's going to go, because that was ridiculous. 2 shotgun runs to Lacy and a shotgun run to Starks. The concept.
I was scratching my head. It felt like it was Seattle January 2015 all over again.
I don't understand the concept when you have Aaron Rodgers of, you know, yeah, fine, try and sneak it in with Lacy on 1st down. They're probably thinking pass, and you can pull that guard around and get him, you know, one-on-one with the linebacker, try and run the linebacker over and get in the end zone. But then, you know, throw Jared Cook a fade, run an option route with Randall Cobb out of the slot, do something. Even just the plays where it seems like they snap it to Rodgers in the red zone and he just dances around until somebody's open. Those certainly seem to work just fine. Let's dive into the Vikings game, though. Once again, I will say we don't know when this podcast is going to fall on the Packers Talk Network schedule. It's a network with a lot of good shows that does get into a schedule during season, because that's when everybody records. There are shows that like to do off-season podcasts. Our show once did like 57 or 58 weeks in a row with at least one episode. But we're probably not going to be that show. This is going to be more of a X's and O's film review style of show that is going to be a lot more frequent in season than it is maybe in the off-season. And that just has to do kind of with my schedule and potentially Zach's schedule as well. So when we find out when we're going to be going on in the week, then we will get a little bit more of a a sense on how much we can preview the next game, how much we can review the previous game, because from the benches was weak on game previews. There's no question about it. It's very difficult to preview the next opponent the Sunday night after the previous game. But we're going to do it because we don't really have a choice at this point. We don't know when we're coming on.
We're going to do it. No worries. We are going to get it done.
So let's talk a little bit about Tennessee, Minnesota. Not an impressive performance at all from the Vikings offense. They won 25-16, and I believe they had 14 or 13 points from return touchdowns out of the defense. One of the things that was a glaring weakness is Adrian Peterson and his 1.4 yards per carry. All personal feelings aside from Peterson, you know, what do you think about a day like that? Because I'm a guy that drafted Sean Alexander the year after he scored 28 touchdowns. And I've seen what happens to big backs when they get old, and it's kind of scary. Do you think that this is potentially the year that Adrian Peterson becomes washed up? Because it will happen, I promise.
It will happen, without a doubt. If it's happening right now, I personally wouldn't go that far, but that's just me. That's just me. And, you know, I want to give some credit to the Tennessee defense for you know, bottling up like that, but we know Adrian Peterson, especially us Packer fans. We know him all too well, unfortunately. We know he's a freak of nature. He isn't like, you know, most running backs we've seen produce in the last, you know, decade or two. He's crazy. He's a freak of nature. This 1.4 yards per carry, I'm not going to really base much off of it. He had a bad day. He's probably shaking off some rust. First game of the season. I think he's going to try and he's going to try. Not saying he will. He's going to come next week and try to, you know, bounce back against the Packers. He's going to try and, you know, get some vengeance. Prove that he's not, you know, slowing down. His age isn't beginning, you know, some wear and tear effect on him. But, you know, right now, I don't think he's falling apart. We might see that happen, you know, the next year or two. But, you know, right now, I think he's still a very lethal threat.
Yeah, I'm not ready to stick a fork in him just yet. I just know, you know, he's 31. It does happen to these running backs, and it's not a very good offensive line in front of him. Sean Hill's not a very good quarterback anymore. The threats around him are not what they have been potentially in the past, so he's going to deal with a lot of stacked boxes, and he's a guy that takes a lot of losses because he has kind of an arrogance to the way that he plays football. He thinks he can score every time he touches it. So most of his runs are trying to make huge gains, and he will get 1, 2, and 4 yard losses more frequently than you probably like out of a running back. Let's talk about the Vikings defense. Completely won them the game today. I don't think there's any question about it. Finished really high last season in some traditional metrics for measuring the way that a defense played over the course of the season, but played a cake schedule. In DVOA, in fact, they were noticeably worse defense than the Packers. Green Bay was ninth last season. Minnesota's 14th. So they were a solid defense. They were an above-average defense, but they were not the elite unit that Vikings fans would like to say that they were. Now, that's also a squad with Anthony Barr, Eric Kendricks, Danielle Hunter, Trey Waynes, guys that are young enough where they can make that year two to year three jump. And even just with the players that they have on the roster, if you believe in their talent, you could certainly think that it's possible for them to make sort of a quantum leap and be one of those four or five best defenses in the league. That's probably what they need to make the playoffs. I think they need like a 2015 Broncos level performance on defense to even really be at all seriously considered a Super Bowl contender. I just think that the talent on offense is that weak. You mentioned, I mean, I was a huge, and I got bodied by some Vikings fans for being biased, but I burned the Treadwell pick. I just think that he, first of all, Chad Kelly is a really good college quarterback and made him probably look better than he was. And secondly, does not have an ability to separate and won a ton of jump balls in college that he's just not going to win in the pros. And I didn't think he was really that. I think he's a possession receiver. And if you're going to take a strict possession receiver who's basically not a playmaker in the first round, you've got a problem. And as you mentioned, he's honestly a non-factor at this point. So have they become an elite defense in your eyes? And if they have, is that enough to – let's not talk Super Bowl because it's just not going to happen. But are they going to be the second-best team in the North? Can they give Green Bay a run for their money, or for the first time, and I can't remember how long, is Green Bay going to have the division wrapped up in week 14 or 15?
I think their defense is borderline. I love Harrison Smith. Harrison Smith is one of my favorite players in the league right now, especially the safety position. And, you know, I'll probably take some flack from Packer fans for saying that, but it's true. I recognize talent when I see it, and I gotta applaud a great player. But I would call Minnesota's defense around top five. Top three in my eyes would be elite. And I don't think they're quite up there, you know, with the Broncos, you know, the Seahawks. I still consider the Seahawks an elite defense, but you know, we'll see. I think it won't be enough to win them the division. You know, even with Teddy Bridgewater under center, I don't think the Vikings would have walked away with this division anyway. But now they're going to be looking really one-dimensional. You know, like you said, Adrian Peterson is going to be facing a lot of stack boxes, you know, due to the lack of weapons around him. You know, really, that's the only guy you got to limit in the Vikings' offense. And that kind of turns the page to their defense and puts a lot of pressure on them. So it's a matter of kind of not, you know, them not getting worn down, you know, and staying healthy. Because, you know, that's really the only bright spot of this Vikings team right now. And that would be that unit defensively would be the only aspect of this team that could even be made in an argument for them to win the division, you know, for them to even come close to it. But, you know, I can get called biased for this, whatever. I'll probably get flamed for it. The Packers will win the division. It's really not a head-scratcher. It's not rocket science. All signs are pointing to it. And, hey, if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong. I'll probably lock myself in, you know, in a room for a few days and reconcile with my thoughts.
Well, the thing is, too, I mean, you see, Mikey says, well, it's fine that Teddy's gone. We won the division last year, and Teddy threw 14 touchdown passes. Sean Hill can throw 14 touchdown passes. Yes, you won the division. Literally everything that wasn't an Aaron Rodgers injury went wrong last season. And I think he was probably playing hurt, too, because it just didn't look right. But last season went as badly as it could have for the Packers, and Green Bay was still had the ball in the fourth quarter with a chance to win the division title. They came up short, which is not historically really what's gone on. But, I mean, the Packers went further in the playoffs than the Vikings did. They were favored basically everywhere. And to use Teddy Bridgewater's injury as an excuse to pretend like they used to be favorites and aren't now is a little convenient and pretty wildly unrealistic, to be honest with you. There's still a pretty big talent gap between the two teams, especially at that all-important quarterback position. So with that said, let's talk about what matchup you're really paying attention to going into this game against the Vikings on Sunday Night Football.
This really goes back to what I said earlier about Adrian Peterson and, you know, how well this apparently revitalized Packers run defense handles him. He has his best games against the Packers. He has, I believe, 1,760 yards against the Packers in his career, and that's the best against any team he's ever faced. I want to see the Packers do what they did to him in Minnesota last year and just bottle him up, slam him to the ground, make him bounce all up like an angry child and try to get in, you know, in the players' faces like he did last year. I want to see that happen, and I want to see it happen in Minnesota's grand opening of their new stadium, you know, U.S. Bank Stadium. I really want to see that happen. I want to see them, you know, manhandle him. You know, they were able to do it today to T.J. Yeldon, and, you know, to the Jaguars' credit, they didn't have Chris Ivory. But I want to see them carry over the same momentum that they had in the game against Jacksonville into Minnesota. You know, this, without Mike Pennell, through these four games, Adrian Peterson is the best running back that they will face in this four-game stretch. You know, they have the Giants, they have the Lions, Vikings, Jaguars. Adrian Peterson, by far, is going to be their toughest test, and I want to see how they handle it.
No question about it. You know, people forget that the Packers haven't lost in Minnesota since 2012, and I think the Vikings are one for their last six in Minnesota against Green Bay. So to say that they're, you know, favored because this game is in Minneapolis is questionable. I'm really going to be paying attention to the Packers' offensive line and Eddie Lacy against that Vikings front seven. I think that you have your normal matchups on the outside, but in having that success on the road against Minnesota, Eddie Lacy actually has been one of the players that has owned the Vikings. You can see a gif from his rookie year of him just destroying Xavier Rhodes. He's actually done that quite a few times, the Vikings players. Whatever it is about that four-man front that Minnesota uses, Green Bay actually is able to get that blocked up in the running game better than people would think. Excuse me. So that's what I'm paying attention to, is Eddie Lacy in the offensive line against the front seven of the Vikings, and not only in the run game, because this is a passing league. The Packers are a passing team. Danielle Hunter, Brian Robinson, Tom Johnson, Linval Joseph, Everson Griffin, guys that are coming and coming and coming. If Green Bay can limit the Vikings to one or two sacks and make them blitz Anthony Barr on every passing down, Rodgers is going to light them up like a Christmas tree. The idea of Chad Greenway trying to cover Jared Cook one-on-one just makes me really, really excited. So that's the matchup that I'm watching, is the Packers in the trenches against that Vikings front seven. That really is the strength of it. Zach, give me a game prediction.
My gut feeling would have told you that I didn't see the Packers going into Minnesota on their grand open. You know, if this was a couple months ago, my gut feeling would have said that I didn't see the Packers going into Minnesota in their grand opening night and beating the Vikings. But a lot has changed since then. The guy's mind can change, and I'm calling a 24-10 victory over the Vikings.
Well, as I mentioned, Minnesota, whether it was the Metrodome or TCF Bank or now this other U.S. Bank stapler-looking stadium, it's not really been a home field advantage for the Vikings. It's not a real strong fan base there in Minnesota. Generally, that game is split about 65-35 Packers fans. People don't understand that from the 20s to the 70s, Minnesota residents were Packers fans until the expansion team was brought to Minneapolis. That's a region rooted in green and gold. That 65-35 split is not abnormal or strange really in any way, and I completely understand where it comes from. Not only that, but with the Packers having basically their entire 2014 personnel back together, history, or at least a look back at 2014, would tell you, you don't really want these guys on turf. And that's what they have in U.S. Bank. I think Sean Hill gets overmatched. I think Green Bay jumps out early and Adrian Peterson gets neutralized. I think you're looking at like a 27, maybe 30 to 13 type of game. I just don't see how, if Green Bay's run defense is going to play like that, how really how Minnesota's going to score. I mean, I think if Minnesota got into the 20s on offense, I'd be pretty shocked, especially considering their offense today. And they've got a kicker who is just mentally gone. He had another awful day today after ending their season by missing a cheap shot last year. You know, they're in a situation where they can't really score touchdowns, but they feel like they need to score touchdowns because Blair Walsh is so mentally far gone. So, yeah, 30-13. I don't think this one's going to be competitive. That 2.5-point spread, I really love Green Bay. I didn't love them today as 6.5-point favorites on the road. They obviously didn't cover. So this game, though, I think is going to be a little bit wider than people think, just because, you know, Minnesota's getting that home field advantage respect. And if you look at the last 4 years, they don't really deserve it. Guys, I'd like to thank you all for listening to this first episode of After Further Review. A couple ways you can help us out. First would be to go on iTunes, go on Stitcher, go on however you come about this podcast, and give the Packers Talk Network a review. We prefer those, of course, with 5 stars. And subscribe as well. When you subscribe, the latest episode of Packers Talk Network is downloaded automatically to the device of your choice. And it helps us when people search on iTunes for the Packers. It helps us come up. It helps put people in touch with the high-quality content that we provide here on the Packers Talk Network. You can follow me again at Ross Hudlin. Zach, where can they follow you?
Zach Ajax, Z-A-C-H, not Z-A-C-K, since everyone seems confused that.
Fair enough. Thank you, everybody, one last time, and go Pack, go.